Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Internet Marketing.
I'm here with Dave Bergman, CEO and founder of The Raptor Group. We're going to be discussing how to gain attention and trust from students. And I thought a good place to start today, Dave, would be your entry into the student market. So I know it was around the 2015, 2016 time. What I'm particularly interested in is what attracted you to the student market?
Yeah, Sean, it's great to be here, Scott. Thanks for inviting me. We've run Raptor, the student marketing agency, since 2015, so coming into our seventh year. Rewinding to 2001, I was a student at the University of Manchester. It's actually called the University of Manchester Institute of Science and Technology, but it kind of merged into the University of Manchester, studying management and marketing. And then I did a master's in enterprise, also at the University of Manchester. So a really popular, culturally relevant university. You know, I think it's got the biggest population across the whole of the UK. So always been really passionate about my time as a student and, you know, delving into all different things whilst I was a student, you know, societies and sports and everything in between. It was a chance meeting, actually, 2015. A couple of years earlier, I'd moved to London to move in with my now wife, and I was working for a marketing agency in London. We found that there was a lot of brands coming over from the US, and it was when the kind of disruptive tech bubble started to grow. Yeah. So brands like Uber were launching in London, as well as Tinder. We found that obviously these brands would be perfect for, you know, 18 to 24 for the student audience, being kind of very tech savvy, also very involved in dating. It made sense. So it was a chance meeting I had up in Leeds, where I'm from. I was at an engagement party, and I bumped into an old friend who had a student club promotional company up in Newcastle. So they used to run student nightclubs and have, you know, thousands of students going through their venues on a weekly basis. I said, you know, I'm working for a marketing agency, to my now business partner, Johnny Edwards. And I said, you know, I know there's lots of brands that are coming across that want to target students specifically. And Johnny said, well, you know, I've got thousands of students in my venues every single night of the week. So we kind of realized quite quickly that if I could get the brands on board and we could activate them in these spaces, then there was a really good opportunity to drive acquisition, which I know a lot of these brands wanted. You know, it was all about kind of downloading apps and signing up to these different services. So that's kind of how Raptor was formed. We started with two or three student brand ambassadors standing outside student nightclubs and asking students to download apps for lots of different new consumer brands: Uber, Tinder, Deliveroo, HelloFresh, etc. As they kind of went into nightclubs. So it did start kind of off campus. And as we kind of continued the journey of Raptor into kind of 2016, 17, we moved more towards doing kind of on-campus activity from there as well. So yeah, that was kind of the how Raptor was started. It was Johnny and I driving around different cities in the UK, partnering with different promoters. We were actually in my mother-in-law's Mini with an American Express card, which we were kind of slowly kind of churning our way through. And yeah, we were, to begin with, we were only paid on acquisition. So it was kind of fly or die scenario, which I think is quite a regular startup story. But yeah, it gave us that kind of hunger and tenacity to kind of drive as many students to kind of sign up as possible. And, you know, it was a benefit to the student as well. I'll give you an example would be Uber. You know, every student that signed up, they would get a free ride. So, you know, they'd take a referral code and share it around their friends to kind of get lots of free rides under their belts. And it would mean that the referral will kind of spread like wildfire across the city. Uber were really happy. You know, we'd get loads of signups in Newcastle. They'd say, can you do it in Manchester? Obviously, I have a great network in Manchester being at university there. So then we went to Manchester. Then we went to Leeds. And that was kind of how we grew our network with ambassadors, with the student audience, but also, you know, with new clients as well.
And was this your first venture into running your own business or co-founding your own business? But you mentioned previously you'd worked for a marketing agency.
Yeah, I'd always worked for other people before 2015. I was at one time working for Morrisons PLC, looking after their events. I did the retail management training program for Matalan. That was my first job out of university. Worked for a few local marketing agencies before kind of taking the leap and moving to London and starting with an experiential marketing agency where did lots of different activity, and one of their main things was brand ambassadors, which kind of gave me the idea of, you know, this would work really well for students and probably a little bit better looking at the profile of a general brand ambassador, not a student brand ambassador. They were usually part-time actors or kind of musicians who were looking for part-time work whilst they did their kind of their passion. Whereas with students, you find that, you know, they'd have a lot more free time. In some instances, this was their main job. And obviously, they wanted to prove themselves to get something on their CV that would set them aside from the competition, from the different students, to ensure that, you know, they could increase their opportunity and probability of getting employment post-university. So, the model worked really well. And it meant that we could, you know, get students on board who were really passionate, you know, who had already proven themselves, maybe with a club promoter selling tickets. They already had that kind of sales instinct and tenacity to kind of grow from there as well. So, yeah, it was my first kind of role into it, first own role. But there was a lot that I learned along the way between, you know, finishing university and getting to this point. You know, there was, I think, 8 to 10 years of, you know, working for different businesses before going there. And, you know, I wouldn't have been able to start the business without having that experience behind me.
Did you ever consider trying to bridge the gap and exploring this opportunity within the agency you were in? The term's come up on this podcast before, like an intrapreneur. So you have this entrepreneurial spirit, but you execute on it within an agency environment, it kind of limits the risk? Or would you just like, no, this is the time to go it alone?
Yeah, I think I never really had that thought. First of all, I didn't think the processes were right in the agency that I was in to be able to, you know, have such a drastic change in kind of their model. You know, they had their set brands, and a lot of the brands that they delivered for weren't within that 18 to 24 audience. You know, obviously the agent, Rapture as an agency, is by students for students. So it's, you know, we have student brand ambassadors promoting to students so that it feels more authentic and relevant, and students can relate to those people as well. So that's the reason it got those numbers. And as well as that, from a personal perspective, yeah, I was just ready to take the jump. You know, I was at a good point in my career. I'd always thought in my head that I wanted to, you know, kind of spread my wings and try something. And I just thought that this was the perfect time to do it, with that, you know, sudden shift in, you know, consumer tech and disruptive tech, and the audience becoming, you know, we know that they've got really good disposable income. You know, there's a pragmatism, I think, around students that, you know, they're always broke and they eat beans on toast, that kind of, you know, I'm not sure what they call it, like that kind of ageism, I guess. Ultimately, they can be one of the richest demographics for, you know, certain times of the year. You know, they get free money 3 times a year. They have less bills to pay. And as well as that, you know, when they do purchase things, they usually get a discount. And it's one of the only audiences who expect a discount. You know, them and old age pensions, I think, are the two audiences who do expect that. And, you know, there's the businesses like Unidays and Student Beans who offer all these kind of discounts, you know, within platforms. And, you know, you go to McDonald's, you show your student card, I think you get a free cheeseburger. So, you know, it's it is a quite really interesting demographic.
I want to know, like, where around the UK you travelled, and I want to know about the late nights and the funny experiences. I'm sure there were plenty of them. But what I'm really curious about, all of that makes sense to me about the proposition of giving students something, whether it's for free, discounts, leaflets, I'm sure, other things. But how did you attract the brands?
Yeah, of course. So I think, again, going back to my experience, you know, the last 4 years before I set Raptor up, I was leading new business teams within agencies, so I had an understanding of, you know, outbound, you know, speaking to clients, starting chemistry meetings, getting briefs in, pitching, proposing, and winning and delivering on that side of things. You know, my business partner wasn't from this world; he was from a promoter background, which is, you know, very, very much more fast paced and less process driven, I guess. So I had an understanding and a good track record of getting brands on board, and it was more around speaking to the students and finding out what brands they were currently using. More so kind of students and people who I knew around London as well. What we would find is a brand that's coming over to the UK. Basically, if a US brand has been successful, they usually try the next market being the UK, just because the audience are very similar. They, you know, their uptake of digital, of tech, of apps and everything is quite similar as well. So they usually start in London. And then once they'd kind of create a presence and some good success in London, they would look at the rest of the UK. And we found that we were strongest with the rest of the UK. We find London quite difficult, especially in the student space, because the universities are quite disparate. Where people live, there's no kind of campus-based and halls of residence. There are, but they're quite dispersed. So we did find London quite difficult, but we did know what the audience were engaging with in terms of those brands. We'd then get in touch with them, however means necessary. We'd try our own network to see if people were working with them. We'd try email, we'd phone, you know, all those kind of usual kind of sales techniques to kind of get in front of those people. I remember the first meeting with Uber, and I was unable to go, and I kind of set my business partner up, prepped him with questions. And I remember we stood outside their head office, which is incredible. It's in Aldgate in London, so it's in the city, these big high-rise buildings, and you know, go in and it's very formal, and you know, for want of a better word, he was very, very nervous, but he came out. You know, we actually won that was our first pitch and we actually won it. So, you know, I think just the fact that we had the audience and, you know, we could help them deliver and activate in the rest of the UK. You know, a lot of, you know, people think UK equals London, but there are, you know, 45 cities across the UK and Ireland that, you know, there's students and availability to be able to do that as well. And with our network with the promoters as well, it allowed us to gain access to that audience. So yeah, we had a lot of success. Like, you know, it was and it was a very uncompetitive area. We kind of found a niche that nobody else was doing. So, you know, who always had student strategies but didn't know how to deliver, you know, we were kind of giving them the solution there.
So how do you think you won some of those deals? It sounds to me like, I don't kind of want to make assumptions or put words in your mouth, but the thing that stood out to me when you were talking there, because I was thinking, well, you've got a reputation, like you've got some good experience behind you, but it sounds like the network, your network of promoters, and just you articulating that in the pitch, saying, hey, we've got this network of promoters around the UK, we can give you kind of a go-to-market strategy really quickly, because we're in the best position to do so. Was that like the unique selling proposition, your network of promoters?
I think definitely, yeah, the network of promoters that opened up to a huge network of students. I think in the early days, like the first few campaigns that we won, we actually delivered them on an acquisition basis, meaning that there was never any upfront payment. What we said is, you know, at the end of the week, we'll tally up how many acquisitions we've done, and then they'll pay us per acquisition. So it was kind of a risk-free from their side. And I think you have to do that as a startup to prove yourself that you know, you've got the capability to deliver. And then as we got a little bit more established, we could start to put campaigns together, etc. I remember our first £10,000 campaign, which was absolutely massive for us at the time. It was a Scottish store. We were doing Glasgow, Edinburgh and Aberdeen. And the brand manager signed off at 10,000 to do X number of club takeovers. And we were doing, it was actually for Deliveroo. And the campaign was we'd go into student nightclubs, and with a selfie frame, the students would use a Snapchat filter to take images of themselves. And then what we'd do is we'd turn up outside the biggest hall of residence the morning after. It was a kind of hangover cure with, you know, partnering with lots of different restaurants from Deliveroo. So it was kind of, just helping them in their time of need. I think the campaign was called Roo Rescue, rescuing students in their time of need. So, yeah, we were kind of the hangover cure there.
So you were the hangover cure guide for a little bit.
That's one thing that, exactly. We were absolutely loved in those mornings. But, you know, obviously there's the stories of, you know, having a few too many drinks when we were kind of doing the activations. And it was us who we also needed the hangover cure. So I remember pickpocketing some of those Burger King burgers in the morning before we distributed the rounds to the students. We'd have ambassadors who would kind of open the doors for us in the halls, and then we'd go door to door knocking on and seeing if they wanted a Whopper or whatever the food partner was at the time. And we were loved, that's for sure, in those times. So I'd definitely say that risk-free was big. Going back to your question, I'd definitely say that the pace in which we could activate, you know, we could be up there delivering, you know, 3 or 4 days later. The actual setup was really simple. And I guess just like our the network to be able to get it into students who were popular so that they could, you know, share it with their kind of wider audience from a social perspective, but then also represent the brand physically in the venue as well. So having that physical and digital connection was, you know, was really strong and something that not many brands were doing back in 2015. You know, I'm sure now most campaigns will have, you know, physical campaigns will have a digital element and vice versa, but it was quite new in 2015 to be able to, you know, amplify the physical experience on a digital level as well. So we wanted to kind of start to push boundaries around kind of what the tech could offer from that side as well. And social was obviously huge. You know, it wasn't so much TikTok those days, it was more Facebook was our kind of platform. Snapchat had just started, and then obviously everything moved over to Instagram, and now it's moving over to TikTok. So things forever change. And, you know, it's, you know, the new recent Raptor has to kind of roll with the punches on that front as well.
On the kind of unique proposition, so you mentioned that the kind of business model, but I was thinking there about some of the names that you mentioned, Uber, Deliveroo. Did you find that once you got a big name, it made the other deals easier to win? Did it give you some kind of legitimacy maybe?
Yeah, 100%. And it's strange, actually. Like we've just updated and refreshed our website, and there's still images on the website from the, you know, from the first campaigns that we ever did. We started off with huge brands, you know, Uber, Deliveroo, Tinder. You know, they're all household names now. Obviously, they weren't when we first started. I remember, you know, we were in the clubs and we were having to explain to people what Uber was. They didn't know what it was. So it's, you know, really, it's strange to think about now. You know, it's they've actually become a verb. Thinking about it, like, you know, you order an Uber, you don't order a taxi anymore. So it's
really not that long ago, really, either.
No, exactly. I mean, you know, 6-7 years ago, it's happened so quickly. But, you know, these brands were, you know, were unknown. You know, I remember when we were working with Deliveroo and their logo was a kangaroo. Like, I bet most people can't remember that original logo. So, yeah, I mean, obviously working with them and watching their kind of, huge rise to, global fame and success was great for us. You know, we kind of rode on their coattails in a way. Obviously not didn't explode as quickly as they did, but it really does legitimize and the business and get brands on that were, you know, real staples within the student space. I think one specifically that really jumps out was when we won the Unilever account for Pot Noodle, and it was the most formal pitch process, you know, dealing with procurement that we'd never done before, and doing three rounds of pitching, and there was other agencies that were involved, and there was an incumbent agency that we were trying to win the work off. And, you know, I remember the brand manager calling me up and saying, like, you know, we've never worked with an agency that's less than 3 years old, and we love your, you know, proposal so much that we're making an exception and all this kind of thing. So it was a huge scalp for us. It was absolutely incredible, and, you know, really helped us legitimize. And again, from winning those kind of brands, then helped us kind of catapult to the other brands that we work with now. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't all plain sailing. We had to kind of roll with the punches initially to then get the bigger campaigns, to then work with a more reputable brands, and just kind of, you know, started to snowball a little bit from there. But, you know, when we first started, I remember, you know, 6 months in, it was difficult. We were, you know, planning the campaigns and delivering them ourselves. There was, you know, we were working 7 days a week. We didn't take any money out of the business. Obviously, we were, you know, we were pretty strapped and, you know, quite low on morale, but, you know, we just kept going, I guess. And, you know, once we took our first paycheck, it was really rewarding. And that's the kind of thing that kind of, you know, catapulted us and, you know, kept us tenacious, really, to get the next deal in.
And I've forgotten, what was the name of your co-founder?
Johnny Edwards.
Johnny, yeah. So did another key aspect of this is actually then following up on what you're telling brands and making sure that you have those good relationships with promoters across the UK. And it sounds like Johnny was key to that. Did he have a lot of existing relationships within the kind of student promotions space in the UK, or did you have to build those relationships?
No, massively. I think, you know, as we talked about before, what was our point of difference? I think having that kind of Johnny's black book of promoter partners was amazing. You know,
it was so
local, the type of marketing that we're doing, you know, the brands that I've mentioned, you know, especially the likes of Deliveroo, who were launching in cities as we were working with them. So, you know, they launched in Exeter. Did we have a network in Exeter? Obviously, we say to them, yes, of course we do. We get off the phone, we get straight onto our partners, and a promoter in Reading, I think it was, and said, like, we need a promoter in Exeter. He said, okay, you need to speak to this guy. He's got the biggest event in this particular city. So we had a chat. You know, we were qualified by the Reading promoter saying, these guys are great. You know, you need to work with them. And then he said, yeah, well, you can have access to the venue and we pay them a fee. And then that network grew like that. So from the network of promoters came the network of ambassadors, because they'd introduce us to their, you know, to their ambassador audience, and we kind of you know, get them working for us on along different lines. But as we moved along, we started to find was we'd have two or three brands on the books, and we'd have the same ambassador working for all three brands, and it really started to dilute the messaging. So decision, I think it was after 2 years, that student brand ambassadors would only exclusively work on one brand. And that's, it got quite difficult, because we need to then widen the net so that we'd have enough ambassadors to, you know, to kind of satisfy all the brands that we'd have on the campaigns at that time. So yeah, so I think it really helped having that initial network through the promoters, which was great. And, you know, as we started to grow, we took on our first first employee, who was
when was that? What year was that?
That was, I think it was 18 months in, so we were 2017 at that point. Alex was, he used to be a ticket seller and promoter, again, out of Newcastle. So I think Johnny still had, you know, a WhatsApp group with all of the ticket sellers, and they said, like, you know, we're looking to recruit anyone looking to move to London. You know, we've got a really cool job, you know, sticking within the space that you already know. I think we had three or four different students who were just about to graduate, really keen, and we met them all. And Alex, who came in, one of the students, was spot on for it. So, you know, from the day that he came on, my kind of event management days were numbered, which was just what I wanted. My wife wasn't particularly pleased with me kind of going to student nightclubs on a regular basis. Yeah. Random city, giving out free food. It's not the best place to be in terms of a new marriage. So yeah, I think that really helped me in terms of my private life, but also amazing job for someone who had just come out of university to go to all these cities and go back to his home city and be able to be the man and activate all these cool brands in the student space. So
back then, you were giving the promoters, like the national promoters around the UK, were you giving them a cut of the acquisition costs? By the brand, and then you would give them a cut, or
So it would be a fee, so a flat fee. So for X amount, we could have access to their venue. We could have the brand logo on their assets, so on the flyers, on their digital assets. Use of some of their brand ambassadors as well to actually activate as well. So it was kind of package fee that we do for all those different requirements.
So what happened when you started giving up the night crawls and you got married and then suddenly your role changes? Like, how has your role changed since 2017? What have you been spending your time on?
Yeah, massively. I mean, the business has changed so much as well. You know, it only works with a few brands to be able to activate in nightclubs. As you can expect, student nightclubs that we were going to, you kind of had 2 hours between students to go out till 11 p.m. So, like, you know, it's exhausting that you've traveled all day to a random city in the UK, you've set up, and then you kind of sat there twiddling your thumbs till 11 p.m. till they finally turn up. Then they all turn up at the same time. You've got 1,000 students there and they're drinking, and then I get to about 12:30, 1 o'clock before they become completely uncompassmentous. Like, it's impossible to chat to them about it. And that's kind of when we like break down the stand and like get the hell out of there before, you get puked on or whatever else might happen. But, you know, that only happened for those brands where it was relevant. You know, Uber works perfectly because they need to get a ride home. Deliveroo works perfectly because, you know, they're ordering food the next day. But then when you're working for more reputable brands, you know, it was moving from that off-campus experience to an on-campus. So what we started to do was build relationships, like we did with our promoter partners, with the university unions in each of the cities. Yeah. So it's the university union who have, you know, kind of access to the student audience and also site space on campus outside the union, which is obviously a busy hub for students, where they go next to the canteen, where they'd hang out. So we'd look to create that network again, but with the student union contacts, and with that we'd start to create do activations, experiential builds in site spaces outside student unions as well. And that allowed us to do activity during the day, which was great. And sometimes we'd do activity during the day and then we'd go to the nightclubs for the evening shift as well. Quite a long day for the event manager, but it would mean that we could, have those different touch points to, really cement the brand within that kind of student psyche, which was great. But in terms of my particular role, it definitely moved from, doing the event. So there's the planning of the events and there's the delivery of the events. I definitely moved away from delivery of the events a lot more just because I was getting a bit old to be in the nightclubs. I'd find myself kind of hiding behind the bouncers and, 5 to 10 years, well, getting up to 10 years too old for that particular space. And, I find it difficult these days as well. Like, I still like to do the training days for the ambassadors. And I was saying someone the other day, it's the only one of the only industries where you're presenting to someone and you're getting older every year. You know, I'm now 37, 38. I was 39 last week, and they're 18 every single year. They're exactly the same age, and now could be their dad. So it's a little bit embarrassing, but I still really enjoy doing it. They always say I'm 30, and I can see they say that so that I can get another raptor. So they're trying their bit, but definitely changed to more kind of growing the business in terms of, getting the right people on board, winning the business, and having that vision of like making sure the brand is, culturally relevant in the student space as well. So yeah, definitely changed. And, the more people that come on board, the more opportunity I've got to, to have that role, which an MD or a CEO should have. I was always told that if you've got a lot on your table, then you're not doing your job right. You need to have that, kind of clear table so that you can kind of steer the ship and drive it in the right direction.
Because we talked a lot there about US brands coming over to the UK in those mid 2010s years. Are some of those bigger brands that come over to the UK now more protective of their brand?
That's a good question. I think in general, the brands that we're engaging with and the brands that we see coming over are a lot more purpose-driven. You know, I think, you know, in the initial days of apps, you know, you had those utility apps that would really deliver on a human need, you know, travel or, you know, food or that kind of thing. So that market's really saturated. I mean, you look at, you know, the grocery and the food delivery space. Now you've got the, you know, obviously Uber Eats, Deliveroo and Just Eat are the big guys. But then you've got all these grocery delivery apps like Gorillas and Getir and GoPuff and all these guys. Well, so those kind of industries and spaces have been really saturated. And what we're finding is the brands that are coming over from the US are a lot more kind of purpose driven. Like, you know, you look at brands like Headspace, for example, you know, are in that kind of mental health space. They're really protective, as you said. You know, they want to make sure that their brands are portrayed in the right light, and that is because they've got a certain, you know, brand personality that they want to upkeep. I think for the startups in 2015, because it was such an unknown and untapped area, the kind of app download kind of scenario, it was, you know, it was a little bit looser in terms of who they signed up. For brands, it's not just about the acquisition now, it's about kind of driving that kind of purpose and messaging and everything in between. So, yeah, we couldn't be as, what's the word without becoming derogatory? Flexible is probably
good. Yeah.
We won't be as flexible as we were back then, you know. And as well as that, as an agency, you know, we have standards that we want to hit and deliver as well. You know, we want ambassadors working for us who share those same passions and purposes as the brands do as well. And we want to activate, you know, every campaign that we do is different. So we want to make sure that we do activate brands in their right environment. Yes, we still go to nightclubs. You know, we work with lots of different alcohol brands. A brand that we're doing a lot of nightclub activity at the moment is for Jägermeister, and it just fits. Yeah. You know, if Jägermeister's a listing at that venue, it makes sense to activate there. Whereas I don't think with Deliveroo, it would make sense anymore to, you know, to activate in those venues. You know, they want us to be more protective of the brand as they've kind of, you know, as they've kind of developed and, you know, matured as a brand as well.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing to reflect on, is that those mid-2010s years, everything was around utility. It's hard to separate out what might be my own bias from what is reality. But I feel like the utility was all that was on my mind in the mid-2010s. Like, oh, this new thing's launched. Like, it was Airbnb, it was Uber, Deliveroo. I'm just like downloading all these things and just willing to try because I'm excited about the technology. And if I'm really honest with myself, I wasn't really caring 7-8 years ago about the purpose as much as I do now. I feel I'm a much more conscious consumer now, which is probably a reflection of just society. It could be a reflection of age and just maturing. But it is interesting to reflect on, because again, you won't be surprised to hear that purpose-led brands is a topic that comes up a lot in our marketing agency. It comes up a lot from the podcast. And it's in the news a lot. There's a lot of talk at the moment about people that are resigning from jobs because they don't feel the purpose at the companies that they're working, and actually purpose has become more important to a lot of people than salary and other perks. It's just interesting in such a short space of time that it's 7 years we're talking, it's not that long really. And that's a huge societal change in my opinion.
It's enormous. And like we see it as well. And, you know, we try and align our, as I said, we did a refresh of the brand recently, and we want to make sure that we are, you know, supporting students and, you know, driving purpose. And we like to work with brands that that have a purpose that we can align with as well. Not to say that we work with brands that don't, but it really helps kind of galvanize and encourage, you know, the audience to engage with that particular brand. So yeah, I see it completely. You know, I see it every day. I mean, I'm sure all agencies say, you know, we're purpose-led and X, Y, Z, but, you know, when the audience are so passionate about being care first, you know, like historically it might have been like carefree, but it's definitely, you know, especially we've got this thing like, you know, there was 2 years of the pandemic, and after then there was this kind of carefree student who just wanted to go out and, you know, live life to the max and experience all these physical and real life IRL and real life things all over again. But with everything, all the negativities around kind of inflation and, you know, the cost cut and, you know, kind of worries about future as well, people have become a lot more care first. And with that comes aligning yourself with purpose-led brands that you agree with. And that's why it's so important now for brands to, you know, have a purpose, but then also be authentic, you know, actually following it through. You can say all this around sustainability, employability, diversity, but if you don't follow through, then students will, Gen Z will see right through it, and, you know, they'll kick your brand to the curb if you're not following through on that.
Have you noticed this change in students over the 7 years working with them?
Massively. Yeah. Especially recently. And, you know, I don't think we'd be able to do the activity that we did in 2015 these days. I don't think as many students go out as much and, you know, get absolutely blind drunk. I mean, I'm sure during Freshers Week, maybe, but I think students are a lot more careful in terms of the experiences that they want to engage with. I think they're more careful with their money as well. Like, they're not as frivolous. A lot of that comes down to kind of the cost of university. You know, it's not just tuition fees that were crazy. Now, I was lucky to be in a generation where the tuition fees were paid for. And, you know, you hear about some of these students coming out with crazy debt and no opportunity of getting employment. So, like, you know, why would you go and, you know, just blow all your money in the first few weeks of university? So we see it, and we expect it, you know, coming up to planning towards September, you know, looking at the campaigns that we're delivering, there is a lot less of what we used to do. So, you know, it is there, and, you know, our team are acting on it. You know, they're adapting to make sure that, you know, we're creating campaigns and we're placing brands in you know, environments that would be beneficial to them.
How many of these campaigns that you're working on these days are online in comparison to offline?
So we try and have a hybrid approach. I mean, we were a bit stumped in 2020 in that, you know, when lockdown hit, all students were sent home. They went to live at their parents' house or wherever it may be. And also all live events were kind of put on hold. You know, think of like a Freshers Fair. You just couldn't have thousands of people in a hall giving out free merchandise and talking about brands. It's just a bit of a COVID nightmare. So we pivoted quite quickly, and we created a digital platform working with the universities, with the student unions. We realized the student unions weren't going to be able to deliver their Freshers Week. So we created this platform so that they could kind of place brands within this kind of, it was like a digital campus really, and we put the brands as kind of 3D models within the campus, so students could still engage and, you know, get deals and discounts or you know, hear about a purpose of a particular brand. So we kind of built that, and we kind of drove a lot more kind of live stream social content interactivity through digital over those 2 years. So I'd say before the pandemic, we were probably 80% physical, 20% digital. I'd say now we're around 50-50. We want to make sure that all physical activity has a digital arm to it, whether it is driving through social to push amplification, or it's got a 3D experience that replicates the physical experience, which is kind of where the pivot during the pandemic has come from. So we actually spun off and created a separate business called Ada, which supports universities, student unions, and high ed platforms kind of activate events on campus, whether it's freshers fairs, careers fairs, recruitment fairs, whatever that may be. But then also from a kind of brand perspective, it helps amplify and push reach on the brands that have been already created. So, for example, a budget might only stretch to do physical activity in 6 cities, but if we can create a digital experience that replicates that physical one, we can drive students from all over the country to then engage with it and get the benefits of it as well. So we also want to create digital experiences that replicate the physical experience. This is something that's quite important. So, for example, if we've got a budget for a campaign that may only stretch to 6 cities in the UK, so we may only do, you know, the main cities, Leeds, Manchester, Newcastle, Birmingham, for example. If we create a digital experience, it will allow us to then reach and amplify that to the rest of the UK. And what we're trying to do is, with these digital experiences, they come in kind of 3D form within a microsite. We'll ensure that it's got different interactivity and different immersiveness so that it delivers the objectives that the physical did as well. So whether it is gamification, personalization, or just deals and discounts, whatever it may be. And we also have one eye on the future as well. We know that Web3 and the metaverse is something that's really coming to a fore, and we know that the first audience who will be taking that up, once it becomes affordable, the first audience who will be adopting it will be Gen Z, because they are, the tech natives and they're tech savvy and they like cutting edge technology. So, yeah, we're very conscious of it. We know that it's not affordable at this stage, but it will get to that point where it does become affordable. And at that point, we'll want to ensure that anything we're doing physically and digitally is also live within those metaverses, whichever ones go live.
And on just in closing for this episode, that's really what I wanted to touch on is trends right now in the student space. So what are you finding, what platforms or apps are you finding that students are navigating more naturally towards? You in the episode, you've mentioned TikTok and kind of learning more about that within your agency. You've talked about Twitch there just a moment ago. Are there any others that have come up more recently?
Yeah, definitely. 100% those two that you just mentioned. We actually work with Twitch as a client, helping to, resonate in the student space. And we've done lots of activity and partnerships, partnering with university spaces or societies and clubs to kind of bring what they do to the student audience. And obviously that was huge in lockdown with like recently done a campaign for Pot Noodle, which was a virtual careers fair that we streamed on Twitch, and students could interact with companies who were offering internships and find out about the industry that that company resided in, and use all the Twitch functionality such as the messaging board or the voting mechanics, etc., which is great. That interactivity over Twitch is awesome. As well as that, as you mentioned, TikTok is probably the most dominant platform when it comes to social. We're finding that it's got really interesting algorithms in terms of reach. A unheard of TikTok user can get thousands and thousands, if not millions, of reach and views based on a video that no one knows why it's so popular. So really, really interesting, very random, but very interesting, and allows for a lot of creativity, which is great. So definitely in terms of digital diet, those two really come to the fore. Another one would be Reddit. Obviously, I've been in the game for, 15 years plus, but we're finding that students really want to move away from Facebook and, all students hate the Zuck and everything that goes with it. We did find that there was some real kind of sensitive topics within the student space over the last year. I don't know if you heard about the epidemic with regards to spiking and, shaming and all things like that. And it's really difficult for students to have a profile and they weren't happy that kind of students could kind of point the finger at them. So the benefit of Reddit is that it is anonymous and students find it a safe place in which they can share thoughts and feelings within a particular subreddit. So that kind of anonymity is a real pull factor for students and something that we've seen is starting to grow and gain traction as well within the student space. As well as that, the issues that students have with mental health, and again, it's something that I mentioned previously, is something that's really at the forefront, especially over the last 2 years of everything that students have been through, in terms of, being locked down and having to do all of their university lectures and all of, their networking from a digital perspective was a real, real blow to their mental health. So I think apps like Headspace and Calm are really coming to the forefront as well to support students and, to drive that purpose that they have as well. So they're ones that I've really seen come through. I think, as I mentioned previously as well, brands really need to show that they've got an authentic purpose and they follow through on that purpose to kind of resonate with students. Students are, are curious, but can also see right through a brand if they're not being authentic. So that authenticity is really, really important. So, yeah, there's a few that we've seen come through recently. As well as that, you know, now that physical is back, you know, driving students back to different locations. I mean, you know, restaurant brands such as Nando's and Wagamama's and people like that are really starting to win because students want to, you know, use their time more wisely than going out to clubs, but also have experiences. So those brands that can offer experiences within their restaurants are being successful. So yeah, some really interesting trends, and we're really excited to see them come to life. I think this year is going to be a great year for students now that the pandemic's behind them. The employability horizon is looking better as well, which is great. You know, there's more opportunity. So yeah, I think, you know, business as usual on campus, but with, you know, with those extra purposes built in, is going to be great for students. I'm excited for them to have a year of normality. September.
Dave, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. It's really interesting. It's been really interesting to reflect on the student market and just the changes over the last 7 years, particularly for Gen Z millennials as well. If people want to find out more about you and the Raptor Group, where can they extend the conversation and connect with you?
Yeah, sure. So for the Raptor Group, it'd be great. Just check out our website. It's actually launched last week with our new branding, new purpose, all our new case studies as well. So it really give you a flavour of what we're about. That's raptor-london.co.uk. If you want to reach out to me personally, absolutely, I'd love that. Just hit me up on LinkedIn will be best. David Bergman, you'll be able to find me there. It's strange on LinkedIn, actually. It looks like there's 500 people working for us, but in fact, most of them are our brand ambassadors.
Yeah.
Who represent us on there. You know, hit me up on email as well, david@raptor-london.co.uk. And I'd love to hear from you and continue the conversation. But yeah, likewise, Scott, it's been fantastic to speak to you too. Thanks for inviting me, and I've really enjoyed answering the questions.
No problem. Any chance of catching you on Twitch?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got our Raptor Twitch, and we do it regularly. Not for a while, actually, but
all right.
Yeah, you can find us on there as well. Raptor_London on Twitch.
All right, cheers, Dave. Take care.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.